Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
Jurassic Views, Ottawa's Raptors podcast, Bryce Diamond, Monday morning. It's been a couple weeks, 2 weeks, in fact. Lots has happened and lots to get to. This episode, I would say, is kind of two parts. There's going to be a Raptors focus and there's going to be a league-wide focus. I have not discussed the Pascal Siakam trade yet. We'll get to that in a second. Obviously, OG Anunoby was traded before that. We talked a little bit about that, and I thought that was a good trade. He's obviously playing very well in New York. So I think both teams kind of did quite well on that trade. But I've been focused, just as a fan of sport, I've been focused on my Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, a great defense led by Snead, McDuffie, big Chris Jones. You know, I remember early on in the Golden State era for basketball, Steph, Clay, Draymond going crazy. And Kansas City for the NFL has some similar qualities to, you know, very cerebral, very modern type, you know, approach to the game. And of course, over the last 6 years, Kansas City has been very successful, much like the Golden State Warriors from 2015 to 2022. And people didn't like the babyface assassin back in the day. There were folks who were, you know, all in on him. There were folks who were amazed by him. And then there are folks, I think like me, that were slow to warm up to Steph, didn't like necessarily this new brand of basketball that was pushing envelopes and changing the game. To what it is now, to be honest. Literally, Steph and that Golden State team have transformed the game of basketball. And of course, it's not just them. There has been, you know, early adopters of 7-second basketball. And of course, 0.5 gets thrown around now and extending the floor and charcuterie offense and these kinds of phrases. But playing faster, playing a more perimeter game, viewing the analytics, and then the swag that came with a new type of player in Steph Curry is very similar to Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and how they've approached the game of football. And of course, you have to have more than offense. You have to think about salary cap a lot more in the NFL than you do in basketball, because in the NBA, there's a soft cap with the luxury tax. And of course, Golden State has set records for what they've done with, you know, the luxury tax and how high their salary is. And this is the end of their dynasty. And in some ways, you know, it's just the peak of Patrick Mahomes' career. And with a top three, top four defense, Kansas City is looking good. So I have been focused on them. I was stuck in the middle of the standings, very underperforming in a lot of years. Kansas City football kind of hit walls and ceilings. I was hitting my head against the wall probably 10 years ago, 15 years ago, watching the team. But Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have really transformed the team, have transformed the league, and they've melded a bunch of things together. And this has been fun. This has been a fun ride for these last 6 years. You know, six straight AFC championship games. Four of the last 5 years, they got in the Super Bowl. And Patrick Mahomes at 28 years old, very much in the prime of his career, the best quarterback, in my opinion, in the world. As Travis Kelce said last night, others have said it before him. Travis Kelce has said it before last night. That's for darn sure. And they have just figured out ways of winning ugly. That's Patrick Mahomes' words, and I think those ring true. When you look at Tom Brady's career, he did a lot of the same thing. They'd have to adapt, him and Bill Belichick, to the teams they were playing, but to their current roster. Sometimes they had incredible offensive talent. Sometimes Brady had, you know, some youthfulness. Sometimes he didn't. Sometimes, you know, he didn't have a good game or a good playoff run. The defense had to bail out the offense. And it's been fun watching Mahomes, Reed, and the team evolve, figure things out. Obviously, they haven't won every year at the highest level in the Super Bowl, but this is their fourth. They're 2-1 in the Super Bowl. They're going to be the underdog like they have been the last 2 weeks. They're not playing on the road. They're playing in a neutral site in Vegas. And I would imagine that this Super Bowl final will still have a lot of people believing that Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City can overcome the odds. I mean, it's not that big a gap between San Fran and Kansas City on the line. I think it's 2.5 right now. It's 3.5 with the Ravens. But, you know, as much as it's not far from San Francisco, Las Vegas is still a neutral site. There will be lots of Kansas City fans there. There will be lots of NFL fans there. And then, of course, San Francisco 49er fans too. But Patrick Mahomes has been here. You know, Brock Purdy has not been to the dance. His team was there 4 years ago. Purdy is a younger guy. We've seen enough of Purdy throughout this season and the playoffs that I think there's enough film to figure out what they have to lock in on and be aware of. But as a fan, someone who watched Raptors basketball as much as I did and had a golden era, that's one thing. To watch a dynasty is a complete other thing. And the Golden State Warriors were a dynasty. Obviously, when KD joined the team, that was just another level of domination, because dynasties dominate one way or another. And you look at a team like Kansas City and where they're at, and then Denver on the cusp, Golden State at the end of their dynasty, and you begin to think, like, where is Kansas City in this? You know, that's how I think as a fan. And there's a lot of confidence to go with the anxious spirit, you know, the nerves of just any fan. And this year, I think more than certainly their first two Super Bowl runs, I was very unsure about how they would do. And I think in a lot of ways, as much as I love Tariq Hill and as much as I love seeing Patty put up points on the board, this might be the most fun I've had as a Kansas City Chiefs fan. First of all, we're playing with house money. We're on the road back-to-back weeks in Buffalo, in Baltimore, and now, you know, not favored again against San Francisco. There's been a lot of arguments. Who's the best team in the NFL, San Francisco or Baltimore, going into the playoffs after what Baltimore did last week against Houston? A lot of people thought they were kind of the best team in the last four. San Francisco had tripped up against Green Bay. They couldn't finish. They were down 17 after the first half against Detroit. Detroit kind of got a little tight, couldn't finish. Well, now you're playing against a team. If you give them a 10 or 17 point lead, they're not going to mess that up. You saw it yesterday on the road when they did it. But Patrick Mahomes and this crew have been around long enough together even though they have new guys on the defensive end, they have young new guys on the offensive end, they're not going to mess about, right? And it's kind of similar. This is very similar to Boston versus Golden State a couple of years ago in the final, when you could see things tighten up for Boston because they hadn't been there and there was a lot of pressure to get there first. And Golden State took advantage, and Steph was just an absolute superstar. He was a legend, absolute legend.
So when you see someone in those moments, like Steph, who's been there before, who knows what it takes, whose team, because he had other guys with him who had been deep in those playoff runs, who had won chips with them, Clay, Draymond, obviously Steve Kerr had been there. And you see them feel pressure. In that series, of course, they get down. They know what to do. They know how to rise above. They know how to play through the pain, discomfort, adversity of the moment or the series. And Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, they're the same. And when the time strikes, when the moment comes, and it's time to play your best, to leverage those monster moments, those guys shine. They really do. And Patrick Mahomes has done that. He has elevated his game. He has shown playoff game after playoff game, Super Bowl after Super Bowl now, when it really is crunch time, maybe his teammates don't, because we've seen them falter. But he himself does something truly remarkable and spectacular. And you know, for me personally, as I look at the Kansas City Chiefs, I just think they're ready for the moment. Now, maybe San Francisco is just too good on the day, and it's not close. And they get off to a good start, and maybe there's a couple mistakes that Kansas City makes, somebody makes, whether offense or defense. They get a couple touchdowns behind. They just can't catch up. San Francisco's too good. But it would not surprise me if the game's close. It would not surprise me if Patrick Mahomes has a moment and the lights are shining bright on him and he is not exposed but elevates. And I can't say the same thing about Brock Purdy. I can't say the same thing against McCaffrey and Samuel for San Francisco and other guys on that team. We just don't know. But we do know how the Chiefs respond. And it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. The game has changed, right? When these players have entered that individual game or playing against that individual team changes. And sometimes the game itself changes. As I was talking about the Golden State Warriors, that era. But you also see the team change, right? And not just the results, but how they have to change. We mentioned that with Kansas City. And we're in this moment as Raptors fans, because we've got to go talk about the Raptors, right? Where things have changed. You look back to that 2019 year we won the championship, there were changes in that year. And the game changed for the Raptors when Kawhi came, when Marc Gasol came, when Pascal Siakam was at this like incredible, monumental moment in his career. He was having, as they say, a meteoric rise. And those three things, along with the flexibility and creativity of Nick Nurse, when he is at his best, he is with these types of players who are on these types of runs. And then you've got a glue guy
in Kyle Lowry. You've got the IQ of Kyle Lowry to lead, to think, to propel you and his teammates to the higher levels, to integrate the things that you want to do as a coach. You know, there's great change and there's great excitement. And of course, the next year, Kawhi's not there. Raptors are still playing unbelievable basketball. Probably not a favorite. The Bucks looked really good. And then yet again, there's another change. And things from the outside this time affected the players on the Raptors and the NBA as a whole through the pandemic. And they went to the bubble. And then Tampa happened and there was changes. And you couldn't undo them, right? And it affected Toronto more than anybody else that 2021 season because they were playing in Tampa Bay. And then Kyle Lowry left. And of course, that changes things. And the tensions grew between Nick Nurse and the guys on the team. And they tried some new things and they're willing to go to places that they hadn't gone before, partly because of guys on the roster, partly because of poor decision-making from Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster. But they found groove and rhythm and excitement in that new creativity, that new thread that Nick Nurse is creating. And he had two guys in Pascal and Fred that were leaders and were willing to implement and keep guys together, even though there were growing pains through OG Anunoby and Scotty Barnes, this great new rookie who is on a competitive team, unlike a guy like Evan Mobley or Cade Cunningham. And then things didn't go so well the next year, and things kind of fell apart, and we were overplaying guys, but Fred still wasn't healthy, and he got re-injured, and OG gets injured, and Pascal, you know, falls as well to being overplayed, and then we get to this year, and there's been all kinds of changes. Fred VanVleet leaves, and Nick Nurse was fired, and a whole new coaching staff was brought in, and the game and the team, the roster, has completely changed. No one except for Chris Boucher from that championship roster is on the team. And Chris Boucher didn't even play back then. So it is a fresh new team. And there are good quality players on this team. But it's so new. Everything has changed for the Toronto Raptors in the last 5 years. But now everything is new. And that newness, along with the youthfulness, the inexperience, is fully facing us. And the Pascal trade to the Indiana Pacers for Bruce Brown, Jordan Nwora, and picks, three picks to be exact, has made things quite different. And I think there's the bright lights have shone now on Scotty, and he's been exposed. I think the bright lights have shone in a new way on Darko because he doesn't have a guy like Pascal, a veteran who's been here for a while, to keep guys together and to implement, to be patient and help guys lead them through those growing pains and the adversity. And as good as Dennis Schroeder was, he was complimentary to Darko and Pascal. He didn't have to do it all himself. And Yak got injured, and when Jakob Poeltl got injured, I think that was really the last moment. And that Lakers game was the last moment, kind of that combination where it was like, this is it. This is the end for that old era or something that could have been bridged from era to era. That's not there anymore. Pascal was the bridge. And that bridge has been taken away. And to see the change is hard because it's not just the players, it's the game. we're going to be a completely different style of team now. Partly entering fully into the modern era, but being something completely different, right? Like each Raptors era around a particular star, whether it's Kyle or Chris Bosh or Damon Stoudemire or Vince Carter or Kawhi with Kyle, it all changes, right? Personality is different, style is different, skill set, and the identity then becomes different. And listen, Scottie Barnes, Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, even Grady, they are going to fit together somehow, and their personalities will fit together in their game, but it's going to be something new. And that's okay. That happens. That's what happens in sport, just like, you know, classes in a school. Grade 9s go to grade 10, and there's a different mix of people, and it's a new identity, right? It's a new kind of culture that's being created by that group of people along with the teacher. And it's a new class, and it's a new era of Toronto Raptors basketball. And it's exciting. It could be good. It could be great. But that shift that's happened has been hard for me personally. I was a big fan of Pascal Siakam. I did not think it was necessary to trade him. I think actually in a lot of ways, he helps Darko and Scotty and Dennis Schroeder. I'm not sure if Dennis will stay, to be honest. I know that when he first came, he had certain expectations and certain beliefs about this team. And once OG was traded, I think he knew he was going to the bench. And that makes sense. But I don't know if he wants to be part of this anymore. I don't know if there's a place for Yak long term, to be honest. And I think there was with Pascal. And I think there was for Dennis Schroeder with Pascal. I'm not sure anymore. I'm not sure anymore. And you guys have heard me talk about Pascal and how much I love him, respect him, but how much I really liked him as part of this team and with Scotty. And why? And the trade itself, Bruce Brown, 3 picks, Jordan Nwora, is that really that good? I don't know. I know they probably will have cap space that they'll be able to use for Scotty, for Emmanuel Quickley, for possibly Gary Trent Jr. I know that they could trade Bruce Brown and get another pick. Maybe a young player and a pick. That's very possible. And I could see that being a good thing. I don't know if Bruce Brown wants to stay. I think Bruce Brown just came off a championship. He would have loved to have stayed in Denver. And maybe he should have, but that's another conversation altogether. But it's a really interesting thing as a fan, having followed this team for so many years. It really feels like similar to when Chris Bosh went to Miami. I didn't know much about DeMar DeRozan. I had kind of fallen in love with Bosh and that version of the Raptors. And then he got injured, I think, in 2010, and they just missed the playoffs. I think that was it. I don't think it was 2009. But you knew that from that injury and just missing the playoffs, the likelihood of Chris Bosh returning to the Raptors was very, very small. And it was time for a rebuild if he was going to leave. Of course he does. And getting from where they were in 2010 summer to where they got to in 2016 when they made the conference finals and lost in six to the Cavs. And then again, summer 2019, when they won the chip, and summer 2018, I guess, they won the chip that year. And of course, Kawhi and Danny come, and Pascal, sorry, DeMar goes out the door. That's tough with Jakob Poeltl. That's tough. That's really tough. And so these things happen. And I think for me at that time when Chris Bosh left, I needed at least a season. And they were bad. I don't think we'll be as bad as the 2010-2011 Raptors. That was awful. 2011-2012, terrible. Then Kyle came maybe at the end of that year. I think he came at the end of the year in the summer of 2012. And I didn't watch a lot of Raptors basketball. They were pretty bad. And then 2013 December came, right? And that changed things. And it takes time. But as a fan, when you really have sunk a lot of time and a lot of love for a team, for players on that team, if they still are playing at a high level and still have a high likability, you don't want them to leave. But it takes time when they do, when they get traded, when they signed as free agents somewhere else. It takes time to recover from that. And I think that's where I'm at. I don't like the trade. But more than that, even if there's this massive change and this team is new, I've got to fall back in love with this team. It's going to take a few dates, a few months of dating to get there before I can fully commit and invest myself. And this happens. This happens in change. It even happens in change within a marriage. Now, I don't want to walk you down through marriage counseling and marriage advice and marital wisdom, but we're changing as individual people, and you have to fall in love again with this person who's evolved and recommit to the relationship. And as a Raptors guy, I'm going to do that. And so it's going to be hard for me, probably hard for a lot of fans my age to do this again. Where, you know, fans who are in their teens and their 20s, they're more, you know, agile, more malleable than I am. And Pascal was with us for a while. Don't get it twisted. You know, this guy, this was his eighth season, I think, as a Raptor. That's a long time. Fred had been with seven. I think OG was in his seventh year with the Raps this year. That's a lot of time. But Pascal, he was within the starting lineup for most of his career and was pretty durable compared to OG. And again, because he was part of such a great part of such a massive, massive part of that championship team and run. And without his meteoric rise, we wouldn't have had a chance to win the chip. That game one in particular of the final, game three of the Orlando series, game one of the Philly series. Like, there's just so many games where he stepped up, where we needed him to be the number one, and he was, when Kawhi wasn't having it. Or teams just were doubling Kawhi like crazy. So yeah, it's going to take time as the game has changed, as the team has changed. So that's where I'm at with the trade. I don't know how much I'll talk about the Toronto Raptors because I'm not watching a lot of Toronto Raptors basketball the last four or five games. I haven't really paid attention to. I watched the first one against Miami post-trade where they couldn't miss in the first half and then they almost threw it away in the second half. I don't know how much I'll watch them. And that's going to take me time. I think a lot of this podcast that I do, certainly by myself, hopefully we'll have some other guests, as I always say, or Zaya will join it, the pod. But if I'm doing these by myself, I think it's going to take me some serious time before I get to being able to watch games. And so most of these pods, just as a warning or just a heads up, an update, will be league-wide stuff, which leads me to a quick team power rankings. And I'll try and do this quick, knowing the time. Got to pick up my daughter pretty soon from her after-school basketball program. But also just knowing the time of the pod, the recording, we're almost at 30 minutes. I'm just going to go through my power rankings really quick. I haven't done it for, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. So I thought I'd do that. So let's get to it, because I think this is important to talk about league-wide stuff for myself, and I think for all of us too. Number 10, we'll just dive right in. And maybe a surprise to some of you, and maybe people won't like it because it seems like I'm giving them a little more than I should, because they have lost their last two games and they should be maybe better than they are, but because of injuries or age, they're sorting stuff out, and it's hard to orient yourself when there's all these changes. Talk about a new team in a new era. The Phoenix Suns are my number 10, a team who's gone 7-3 in the last 10, who has seen the big three, Beal, Booker, Durant, play a lot of minutes now together in their last 7 or 8 games. They've looked good. They lost to a Pacers team recently, who's probably an honorable mention on this list, came back without Halley, half-court Halley. Tyrese Halliburton injured. Pascal lost the first 3 games of the Pacers. Then they won 3 games. One of those 3 games was against Phoenix, and a really nice fourth quarter comeback. But the Phoenix Suns have been playing really good basketball, and they look dangerous. And the mid-range looks great, and the spacing looks great. I think they still want to pick up someone maybe in the trade, at the trade deadline, which is coming up in 2 weeks, or in the buyout market. Kyle Lowry is a name that has come up. I could see that. We'll see. But the Phoenix Suns are my number 10. At number 9, OG Anunoby's team, the New York Knicks. And I could put them in the power rankings 8. I could put them even 7. I could sneak them in at. The New York Knicks have played really good basketball the last little while. OG fits in perfectly, as I think he would a number of teams. The New York Knicks have won 6 in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They were without Mitchell Robinson, but they do have some good centers who have played well. Hartenstein and Jericho Sims have played well. And Julius Randle's awesome at times. He's a bit inconsistent, but he's been really rock solid. The bench has been good. And, of course, Jalen Brunson, who is an all-star, in my opinion. And maybe good enough to play starting point guard for the Eastern Conference. But regardless, the nod went to Dame. The New York Knicks with 6 in a row. And, again, could be higher. But they are my number 9 in this power ranking. At number 8, another team who has played really well despite there being injuries, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are 9-1 in their last 10. Donovan Mitchell, another all-star guard in the Eastern Conference, playing excellent, excellent basketball. He will get there along with Jalen Brunson. But they're playing great. Jared Allen has been excellent. The bench, some of the shooting has been ridiculous. At the front end of the tear, I think it was actually just before they won 9 in a row, they lost to us, to the Raptors, before the Pascal trade. It might have been just after the OG Anunoby trade. And even in that game, they shot the lights up. But Caris LeVert shot the ball well. Max Strus, Sam Merrill, I believe, is one of their young guys who's off the bench. Dean Wade, not Dwayne Wade. Dean Wade has played very well and has shot the ball incredibly well. Of course, Niang is in there as a new guy with Strus. He's helped spread the floor, and it's given
Mitchell Robinson while Darius Garland's been out. And it'll be interesting when those guys get back. But it's allowed Mitchell to just attack because they're shooting so well, to have to stay close to these shooters. He's just been ripping it up. So that is my number 18, the Cleveland Cavaliers. A lot of Eastern Conference teams in this first set of five. Philadelphia 76ers, who have likely the MVP of the NBA to this stage of the season, regular season award. They have lost their last two games. They are 6-4 in their last 10, but they have looked really solid. They did beat the Nuggets when the Nuggets came to town. They dominated a fourth quarter. Embiid beat Jokic in that game. They looked really good, but, you know, haven't been dominant, but have been rock solid and have the third best record in the Eastern Conference. I think maybe the fifth or sixth best record in the NBA. So the Philadelphia 76ers are my number seven, which I think is where I had them 3 or 4 weeks ago. Dropping down a little bit in this rankings, power rankings, is the Milwaukee Bucks, who probably could be as high as three, which is, I think, around where I had them. They might have been fourth on the last one, three or four. And they've been fine. Milwaukee Bucks have been good, 32-14, second best in the Eastern Conference. I believe they're tied with the second best record in the NBA, 7-3 in their last 10. They did win their last game. That's all they have for the winning streak. They have been 21-5 at home. Very, very good at home. One of the better teams in the NBA. But they're not deep. They just went through a coaching change. Adrian Griffin was fired. Doc Rivers, don't know about that, has come into the fold to try and be a galvanizing presence. Yes, Tyler Herro, I do know what galvanizing means. I hope you have Webster's Dictionary not too far away from you so you can look at that word again and look the definition. But maybe that was a joke. Probably was, knowing Tyler. But the Bucks do have some shaky spots. Obviously, defensively, a lot of people have been talking about them. And so for me in this power ranking, they just don't look as good as the other teams. And certainly they don't look as good as they were 3 weeks ago. But they're not far off. That's for sure. I think they're ahead of the Sixers. And I think I would take the Bucks in a seven-game series if they played the Sixers, which is very possible in the second round. But that's a long way away. Number five. And maybe I ranked them lower unfairly, even though right now they're tied with the Bucks on record and they're number two, tied with the best record in the Western Conference, is the Timberwolves. I don't know. I don't believe in them the way I probably should. I don't give them the benefit of the doubt, but they did lose their last game. They are 6-4 in their last 10. I just think there's just holes. I just don't believe in them yet. And so I think my bias is against them a bit. And so I don't put them higher than maybe the record suggests they are. But yeah, the Timberwolves are my number five. In the number four spot, and maybe they shouldn't be ahead of the Wolves, but they are. And this is, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. And when they want to play, when they really want to crank it up, boy, are they good. 8-4 at home, second best record at home. No, third best record at home in the NBA. 7-3 in the last 10. The Denver Nuggets, of course, they have arguably the best player in the league. Even though he wouldn't be an MVP because he's got a guy beside him named Jamal Murray who was awfully good. He's got a coach who's just rolling with this particular group in Mike Malone. He's got championship pedigree and swagger. They don't care enough about the regular season. But then when they want to, like when they went into Boston, they win games and can do it down the stretch. And so for me, because of their home record, because they're what they've done in the last 10 games, they're just a little bit ahead of the Wolves, a little bit ahead of the Bucks. And so the Nuggets are my number four in this power ranking. Number three, the number one team in the Western Conference, maybe I should have them higher, is the OKC Thunder. I love Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You all know that. He is fantastic. I had him, I think, number one in the MVP conversation before. Probably Embiid is ahead of him now, 3 weeks later, since I did it last. But that's another conversation I'll get to, another episode, where we talk more about individual players and teams. But the OKC Thunder with a record of 32-14, again, same as the Wolves, 7-3 in their last 10. They did lose their last game. They are my number three team on this power rankings in the NBA. My number two, and I think they're my 7 or 8 seed, could have been the 6 last time I did this, but they have surged. And I said they would. I said I would not be surprised. Look for them to continue to rise. And they have. And after a very slow start of 3-7, folks, they are 27-7 since that 3-7 start. Everyone was making fun of them when they were 3-7, having lost 5 games in a row, I believe. The Los Angeles Clippers, in this power ranking, right now, are number 2. They are so good, so freaking deep. They might be the deepest team in the NBA. Like 1 through 10, they are the best team. They've got so much skill, so many problems that they put oppositions in. They are my number 2 team, and they look awfully, awfully good. Again, 27-7 since that shaky start. They are 8-2. In their last 10, they've won 5 in a row, and they are only second to the Boston Celtics, who did lose their last game, but they have the best home record in the league, 20-2. They have the best record total, 35-11 on the season. Boston Celtics with the best starting lineup in the NBA. They are my number one team. They've just looked like the champs. They look like they are going to win this season. They'll certainly be the favorites. I think Denver will have something to say with that. I think the Bucks will probably make a trade or buy a couple guys, get a couple guys off the buyout market. And I think they will push and prod and make Celtics work. But I think it will be a Western Conference team that has the best chance to knock them off. Maybe that's the Clippers. Maybe it's the Nuggets. We'll get the final that – you know, we dream about Celtics versus Nuggets. I'm not sure the NBA would like it, but the Thunder versus the Celtics would be awfully fun. Clippers in LA, I'm sure they would love that. Suns versus Celtics, like it would be 152 to 150 every night. But the Boston Celtics are my number one seed. And that is my power rankings for today. And it's exciting. It's fun. Watching the NBA is a lot of fun. I know right now I'm watching a lot of playoff football. I'm thinking about the Chiefs. I've got Arsenal, who are near the top of the table. They got a monster game this week against Liverpool. But this is a basketball pod, and I had to talk about the league. And not wanting to talk too much about the Raptors, I had to talk about some league-wide stuff, and so I did. Hope you're well. Peace in Palestine. May there be a ceasefire soon. And maybe even a two-state independent sovereign solution, because there should be. Hope you guys are well. Love to you, and we'll catch up to you soon. Peace. I think I don't do dreaming or money or function. I do arts.